back to the Cattle Menu podcast. I'm Caroline Rose, the founder and CEO of K Rose Company and Cattle Menu. Thank you for joining us on this episode. I'm excited to bring you these conversations each week filled with relatable advice and techniques you can take back to your operation. It's my mission to make sure that we can ranch in the next generation. Make sure and subscribe where you're listening so you never miss a new episode. Welcome to another episode of the Cattle Menu Podcast. I'm your host, and today I'm thrilled to be joined with Barry. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for asking me to attend. This is going to be fun.
Absolutely. Why don't you just start and give a little bit about your background and kind of what you're up to these days?
A little bit of background. I was raised on a mixed livestock and grain operation in central Alberta. After I finished university with a master's degree in animal nutrition. I worked for Alberta Agriculture for 27 years, another 10 years in private industry. And since March of 2020, my wife and I have started up our own private livestock nutrition consulting business in Camrose, Alberta.
Okay, perfect. So you're just north of us in Montana. We've done a lot of business in Canada with some Canadian cattle feeders. And one of the things that I think is so interesting is the genetics and the type of cattle that are raised in Canada is a little bit different than what we see kind of in the northern states. So talk a little bit about kind of what your main customer raises and kind of what genetics that they're offering.
Most of the cattle in Alberta, Western Canada, are an Angus or an Angus cross. A number of people use Charolais or Simmental as a terminal cross to increase carcass size. Average cow size is probably in the northern half of the province is probably 1400 to 1500 pounds. As you get closer to the U.S. border, cow sizes drop to about 1200 to 1300 pounds to match forage availability in those areas.
That's what I've noticed too, is it's almost like cattle in Canada maybe are just a little bit slower maturing. Do you think that has to do with just the type of cow that they've been breeding year after year? And I don't think it's a negative thing.
Maturity of the cows, it usually takes to the second calf. When the second calf is born is when the cows are fully mature for size. They'll typically be 85% of mature body weight when they deliver their first calf. So it is a long process. One of the problems we have up here is that some of the nasty weather we have over the winter, and that really affects body condition score and animal growth. The biggest problem is when, after the first calf has been born, those first calf heifers are usually the ones that give us the most problem with reproduction and have the lowest conception rates compared to any other group of cows in the herd.
Yeah, I completely agree. Let's, before we really get into nutrition, why don't you kind of give us an idea, a picture of what your guys' nutrition company looks like so we can kind of get a visual in our head about, you know, who you work with and what services you offer and kind of how frequent you are involved in these programs.
We run our own private consulting business as an independent nutritionist, so I'm not directly linked to any feed company, but I will go ahead and send tenders and bids out to any feed company that's interested in the local area or within the province. So our services are directly to cow-calf, backgrounding feedlots. I'll do some work with finishing feedlots as well on the smaller side. And I also work with bison and sheep. So the approach that we have is we go one-on-one with producers. If they need feed analysis or feed sampling done, we do that as a service. Then I balance individual rations And generally, I'd say 95% of the time, we design a custom mineral that is a bit different, or sometimes quite a bit different, than what they have in the major feed mills as stock product. So we try to customize everything so that it matches what the animals actually need on each individual farm.
That's so fascinating. So would you say most cow-calf producers in particular need to do some feed analysis? It seems like it's pretty common in our world, but we have a backgrounding lot, and so we're doing really specific rations. But I'm not sure how common it is in the cow-calf world to do a lot of feed analysis. What's your opinion on that, and kind of how can that be beneficial?
The Beef Cattle Research Council, which is one of the research arms here in Canada, just finished conducting a cow-calf management survey. And what they found was only 50% of the producers actually feed test, and only about 35% do something with those results to build a ration or customize rations for their herd. If you don't know what you have in your feed, you have no way to know if you're going forward or backwards or sideways. So my feeling on this, and yes, I'm biased, every operation should have feed analysis done before they start building a ration for the herd.
And when you talk feed analysis, are you looking both at like hay and pasture and forage, or one or the other, or both?
To get a good idea of what you have, you test everything on the farm: hay, green feed, silage, grains. And the other big factor is water. Water can throw nutrient absorption rates out the window if you've got high sodium or high sulfur levels. So you need to take everything into account that you're going to be feeding.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought about water, but what are some of the major issues you see coming up in water that potentially producers don't know?
Montana and the northern U.S., along with western Canada, has been in very, very dry conditions over the last 3, 4, 5 years. And what we're finding is if they're using surface water, such as a dugout for their water supply, the concentration of these total dissolved solids is going up, especially the sulfur and the sodium levels. If sulfur levels in the feed and water are too high, it can cause polio. If sodium levels are very high, free choice salt intake off from a mineral feeder will drop considerably to a point where they won't want to eat any mineral or salt mineral combination at all, free choice.
I did not know that. I don't think we test our water. So now I know what I'm going to bring up at the next meeting. Let's talk about building some rations and putting together some complete programs. What are some things you've noticed in the industry and some of the changes that are coming up in the nutrition world?
Well, the one thing with high feed costs, people are really looking at how to mix and combine feeds of various qualities to reduce their overall feeding cost, but still meet nutritional requirements of the animals. The second thing that's happening right now is people are looking for options using various commercial products that may or may not be economical. They may be convenient to use, but they may not be economical. So that's the other thing, is people are getting on a bandwagon and following it through. If the neighbors are doing it, I'll do it because it's probably a good thing. And sometimes that's not the case.
Absolutely. One of the things that we're doing a lot of this year is feeding potatoes because of the potato market in the States. They can be delivered into the back grounding lot pretty cheap, but it does affect the entire ration when you change something like that and use maybe, I don't know if a non-traditional feed is the right word for it, but I am seeing a lot more of that, a lot. I don't know if it's creativity or, you know, people trying to cheapen the ration, but just a lot more outside the box thinking when it comes to nutrition recently.
Oh, absolutely. Potatoes on a dry matter basis has approximately the same energy content as barley, or just slightly less energy than corn on a pound for pound basis. The big problem with potatoes is that they're usually someplace around that 75 to 80% water. So there's a limitation based on water intake as well. But, you know, using corn distillers, wheat distillers, pelleted feeds as byproducts from the ethanol industry or from the brewing industry, all of those things are catching on and being used more and more. And it's a great way to reduce costs and often helps fill the voids that are there in a feeding program, especially if you're looking at a higher straw or lower quality forage into a ration for, say, a pregnant cow. If you don't have enough protein, feed intake will go down, and therefore the body condition score of those cows will also be on the downward slide. So using something, brewer's grains, distiller's grains, with the higher protein content as a byproduct in that straw grain ration fills that void of having enough protein in what the cows are eating.
Are you trying to find the right planner to start the new year with? Look no further. We've created the Cattle Menu Planner for ranch wives, mothers, and daughters who are looking for the perfect place to capture all of their thoughts throughout the year. Our planner is the perfect guide to help you get your operation started. In the Cattle Menu Planner, Paving Your Path, you will create the foundation for your operation, set goals, and learn how to implement them. We have included our customer favorite blank calendar pages so you can start when you're ready. Grab yours today at cattlemenulive.com/planner. To get a sneak peek of some of the new sections of the planner, you can go to cattlemenulive.com/peek.
One of the things that I've noticed when feed costs go up is we start to either decrease supplements or we stop testing, something to that nature. It seems like nutrition is an area that can be cut, and it takes a while to see the effects of that. So what are some red flags that producers should be looking at that maybe they're not meeting the nutritional requirements, or, you know, they need to, this is an area of concern? Do we have some benchmarks that you focus on that you consider when looking at a total operation?
Yeah, the biggest thing for me is knowing how big your animals are, how many days you need feed to be supplied to them, and also the amount and number of bales or feed inventory and weights of what you have available to feed. So that right now there's situations where people up here are still going to be feeding for another 30, 40, 50 days, and they're going to be out of feed in about 2 weeks. So knowing your inventories and animal requirements till the end of the feeding period will save a lot of problems by properly figuring out what you have when you start the feeding. Some of the things that really kick into effect when you cut down on the amount of feed or supplementation for the animals is the first thing that you lose is immunity on the animal. They're not able to withstand diseases as well as an animal that's in good condition. The animals will start losing weight. So if you're at a body condition score of 5 to 6, that's the minimum that you want for a cow that's going into lactation. If she's thinner than that, She'll not be able to produce as much milk. The quality and quantity of colostrum developed 4 to 6 weeks prior to calving is not going to be there, so the calf immunity is going to be down. But the biggest thing is, if those cows start to drop condition between calving and the breeding season, first service conception rates will go down by 20 to 30%. Cows will take any place from 30 to 40 days longer to start cycling and be receptive to the bull. So that'll negatively impact the number of calves that you could potentially have the next year, or the size of the calf when it comes to sale day. If you don't have the proper nutrition to those cows, the effect on immunity on that calf is immense. And with the prices of calves right now, the last thing you want is for them to get sick and not make it to market.
Yeah. How do we measure immunity? I mean, is there a certain percentage that we should expect to, you know, get sick? Or is that something that's really herd-based? Do you have a good benchmark for that?
That's a really tough one to answer. I don't have anything off the top of my head. But one of the simple things, especially for cows on free choice mineral program, for example, if you've got a red or a black animal and you place that animal between you and the sun and you look along the flank of the animal, if there is a carrot orange tinge at the edge or the end of the hair, instead of being a nice red or a nice black, you can see this carrot orange color. That's a poor man's indicator that there's a copper deficiency, because if you don't have enough copper, pigmentation is lost in the hair. And if you see that you've got a copper deficiency by that easy test, more than likely you're going to be deficient in the other trace minerals, and that will affect animal performance.
Yeah, that's a good marker. And I think good records, right? If we see an uptick in illnesses or treated animals, that also might be cause for concern.
Absolutely. That's where the veterinarian comes in. For me, as a nutritionist, to have an effective program in place, it's like a three-legged stool. You need the nutritionist, you need the producer, and you also need the veterinarian involved to develop a good program.
When you said that, the first thing I thought about is, how do you find a good nutritionist? And I don't mean, you know, like there's not a ton of good ones out there, but do you recommend like an interview process with nutritionists, or how do you find someone that, you know, fits well in your operation, and so they feel like someone who's on your team? Because that's really what you want.
Absolutely. First step is to have that phone conversation with the person you're considering to employ as your nutritionist. Our company, for people that request it, we will actually go out on farm, look at the operation, spend half a day with the producer to see the cattle, see the facilities, talk about what the producer wants to do or what his objectives are for the operation and what his goals are, and then from there develop a program that'll work for the person.
I think when we think about a nutritionist, we need to think about someone who's on, you know, our ranch's team, someone who's going to play this vital role in being a team, sitting on the board of directors, whatever term you want to use, versus someone that you just call when you kind of get into a wreck.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll give you one example. This happened many years ago. Fellow had a 1,000 head cow calf operation with a 12% open cow rate. I was asked to come out, take a look at the operation, see what could be done. Fortunately, he had 10 years of feed test results available, so I scrutinized through those. And because of the type of soil conditions and forage that he was feeding to these cows or having them graze, manganese levels were probably 4 times higher than what is normal for traditional alfalfa grass hay or a grass mix or a native pasture. So we cut the manganese out of that mineral completely. That was the only change that the gentleman did. We changed one thing at a time. Next year, his open cow rate was down about 3.5 to 4%. So you have to be part of the team. You can't just sit in a in an office and punch a number in a keyboard and say, well, that looks good on paper. You got to see if it's actually going to work for the gentleman or not.
What is some of the biggest lessons you've learned as you've been working with ranches and working with operations over the last couple of years? Like, what are some things you wish you could tell every producer so they could avoid?
The biggest thing that we've experienced here in this last year is open cow rates have jumped from the typical 5 to 10% range. Some operations are up to 40%. And what the consensus is that people have been pushing their pastures too hard. The cows are not in good enough condition coming off a pasture, and with the feed shortages, the cows are being pushed as hard as they can go. And what they're finding is those cows are slipping one cycle per year. So over the last 3 or 4 years, instead of having 70% of the calves born in the first 21 days, that number has dropped. And the numbers in the second or third cycles have gone up accordingly. This last year was the tipping point, where some of those third and fourth cycle, or second and third, or third and fourth cycle cows, they did not cycle at all. And therefore, we ended up with that 20 to 40% open cow rate. So it's not something that you can cure in a very short period of time, but also it just illustrates the point that you have to be diligent on monitoring cow condition, their nutrition, and looking at your records, seeing what your, for example, the calving distribution is. And if you see that's changing, that's an indicator that something isn't right with the nutrition program, or maybe there's a herd health problem. Maybe there's a bull that's not doing his job, and that's accounting for some of these open cows. But it's diligence and being able to just keep an eye on things.
Yeah, that's really interesting. This is a year, you know, I talk a lot about the cattle market, and this is a year where I really encourage people to sell those open cows, because I'm not sure how long the high value is going to be. But even more so, this is a year where if a cow breeds back, I mean, she's instantly worth an incredible amount of money compared to some previous years.
We are so excited to bring you Cattlemen U merch. This, our first merch drop, is centered around our mission of supporting the beef industry and the women in it. You can never have enough graphic tees or crew necks, whether you're out working cattle or in the field or running errands. You can grab the perfect piece to add to your closet now. Shop today at cattlemenulive.com/store.
Right. I'm going to challenge you a little bit on that one. Right now, a bred cow is running someplace around $3,400 to $3,500. If you go ahead and sell an open cow and buy another one back in, there are times when those cows that you bring into the herd don't mesh with the rest of the animals, or they don't fit your environment, so they may last a year or two in the herd and they're down the road. Buying in replacement heifers is quite expensive as well right now, $2,700, $2,800. We did some calculations to raise a, or to feed an open heifer, one that hasn't calved for you, is going to cost someplace between $1,200 and $1,300 to feed her for the year. You know, injections and everything else associated with that. But if that's a young cow, for example, a J cow, it's only 2 years old. Usually it's the second calvers that are open. If she's worth her salt, is it cheaper to feed her for 1 year and not receive a calf and get a calf when she's a four-year-old and save that cost, which is about $3,500 to raise a calf as a replacement heifer to the time when, until that animal delivers their first calf. So I'm challenging that theory a little bit. Maybe it is cheaper to keep that young, good cow with the genetics that you know, with the temperament and ability to fit into your management system and your environment. Maybe it's worth spending that $1,300 on feed. If that animal does not have a calf the following year, it's going to be in very, very good shape. You can sell them into the market in, for example, May, which is the highest price for cull cows. And if it's under, in Canada, if it's under 30 months, it's still considered a youthful animal, and you'll still get a really good dollar. So I challenge that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you're going to buy to replace, it's so hard right now because the demand for bred cows is really high. And so a lot of people are expanding their herds and adding to their herds. And, you know, and the cull market is high, consequently, at the same time. And so you have to decide, you know, what your cost is per year. And I thought that was really interesting, you saying the cost of running a cow nutrition-wise. I'm not sure that's a number most operations know. And so do you have more information on that? Like what the average cow costs to run, you know, nutrition-wise for the year?
Yeah, there's a survey that was, or a research project done by Manitoba Agriculture on annual cow-calf production costs. It's available on the Manitoba Agriculture website, and that's where I got that information from for the cost of feeding an animal for a year versus, selling and buying back a replacement.
Yeah, because I just don't know that that's a number that I hear a lot of producers know for their own operation. Is that something that your company helps people figure out what it's costing to feed a cow per year?
When I do a ration, I include feed costs at the local market, or what he values the feed in his yard, and with a summary report, I can provide total feed costs for the year. And when you work it down to say a cow in mid-pregnancy, late pregnancy, lactating cows. Each one of those groups is set apart individually because their nutritional requirements are different. And part of the report that is developed includes a daily feed cost for that group of animals per head or by per group. So it's a great way to put numbers together and also provide a summary for what their total feed cost will be for the winter, for example.
I think that's so helpful when people are figuring out, you know, where to price their calves, what time of year to sell their cull cows, because that's a conversation that I get a lot is, you know, we see the cull cow market be the lowest in October and November, and a lot of people don't think they can afford to hold over those animals, or the price change doesn't matter. And so I think that service alone is really valuable, and I hope a lot of producers take advantage of that.
Historically, the lowest price for cull cows occurs any place from about the end of September till the end of November. If you feed them for a couple months or feed them until you hit that February market, generally the price increases more than what it's going to cost you to feed those animals. And plus, if you feed them for that extra 100 days and the cows were a little bit thin because they were culls or something happened, you put that extra 200 or 300 pounds of weight on that cow, there's not much of a slide compared to what you're going to have with, say, a 6-weight versus an 8-weight feeder animal. So if you can figure out your cost of gain versus what the market potential is, a lot of times keeping those cows for an extra 2 or 3 months is often cost advantageous, and you get a better net return even though you're feeding them for another 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, that's so smart and something that I think people should really pencil in and figure out what works for their operation. And, you know, there's a ton of different factors, but it is the coal cow income is a large portion of ranches' incomes a year. And so it is something to just not go through the motions, but instead pencil out and figure what works the best for your operation. Absolutely. Is there any other topics you want to talk about before we get into the rapid fire questions?
The one thing that I recommend to clients is don't be afraid to ask, especially on the cow-calf operations where you're working with the animals every day and you don't see a gradual change in their body condition score. Invite a neighbor over for a cup of coffee, somebody who's got a good eye. Have them come over a couple times, a few months apart, especially towards fall, and have them look at the cows to evaluate condition. Because he might see something that's changed and you don't pick it up as a person working with those animals every day.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Or even sometimes I recommend when you have your vet out to do your consulting vet program, you know, having them give a good idea or even take some pictures and being able to compare that way, because it is just human nature. When our nose is to the grindstone, sometimes we don't notice changes or things as easily as a 50,000 foot view.
Right. The other thing that really works well is when you've got the cows coming through the squeeze, either for injections or, you know, you're doing something with them, body condition score the animals. And that's a hands-on approach to estimate the amount of fat that the animal is carrying. And the big one for me is when you're working on the animal, you want to work on, when you're standing behind the animal, you work on the right-hand side of the animal. And what you're doing is using your thumb to put pressure over the short ribs. And by the amount of pressure and sharpness of the bone, it gives you an indication of how much fat that animal is carrying. And therefore, if you're a body condition score of 4, you know that animal is probably 200 pounds lighter than what it should be by the time it gets to calving. So you have to adjust the ration. On the other hand, if you've got a condition score of 7, those animals are on the fat side. And therefore, you can cut back on the concentrates or adjust the ration so that animal is not overfat at calving and save some feed costs. So body condition scoring is something I like to use very regularly, and it tends to help solidify what your eye is actually seeing versus what you felt by the hands-on approach.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great suggestion. Thanks for sharing that. It's not something that we do, but I think it is something we need to do.
Yeah, and you don't have to do many. If, you know, even if you run 5% of the cows in, or if it's a larger herd, if you got 20 or 25 cows going through, it'll take about 45 minutes to an hour to do that. And the results that you get may change your idea of what you need to do to feed those cows getting closer to calving or after calving.
Perfect. Okay, let's get into these fun rapid fire questions.
Sure.
What is your favorite cut of steak and how do you like it cooked?
I like the strip loin, medium rare.
Perfect. What is an agriculture industry topic that you think needs talked about more often in mainstream media?
Sorry, in mainstream?
Media, like on the news.
Farmers and ranchers, are people who make their living by raising cattle, raising crops. It doesn't matter what. They are always trying to keep the animals as healthy as they possibly can, or keeping the soil productivity and soil health in line. I'm thinking along the lines of pasture management and as part of that, because they know that if they don't take care of the animals are less productive, and people have pride and a conscience to do as good of a job as they possibly can.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. We definitely need to talk about that more often. Okay, what is the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Never stop learning. The day that you stop learning is the day you're in a wooden box. That came from my grandfather.
I love that too. I should have that written down. And then this one's kind of fun, but do you have a non-career dream job?
Professional traveler.
Where would you like to go next?
Scotland is the first one on our bucket list.
Okay. Yeah, that would be fun. I love to travel, and I think the world is a better place when everyone travels a little bit more and gets outside their comfort zone.
It's amazing when people have the opportunity to see something different or experience a different country. It definitely broadens their horizons and their ability to think outside the box.
100%. We talk about my travels a little bit on the podcast, but I am a much better person because of where I've been.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't agree more.
Well, perfect. This was a great conversation. We'll be sure to put your contact information in the show notes. So if anyone wants to reach out to you and potentially have you come to their operation, for those of our friends that are up near your practice. And I really appreciate your time today.
It's not hard to work with clients with telephone, emails, video, pictures. It's not as good as being on the farm, but you can get very close to having the same results if you're willing to spend the time on the phone to talk and talk and talk.
Perfect. I think that's good to know, because sometimes when we get into rural, you know, areas, it feels a little limiting if everything has to be done in person. And so I think technology has allowed us to bring in some experts from not in our area. And I think that's a really good thing. Thanks again for listening to the Cattleman U podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. We are thankful to have you in your community. Like always, remember, the grass is greener where you water it.